it is Tuesday, May 12th, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Alana Hill. Seoul and Washington held defense talks at the Pentagon and agreed to work together to strengthen cooperation in areas of mutual security interest. More on that in news briefing. On In Depth, we delve into the Bank of Korea's possible shift toward rate hikes, the KOSPI's record-breaking rally, and Samsung Electronics' bonus dispute. And on Hallyu Highlights, we discuss BTS's Mexico City takeover and Blackpink's Lisa joining the 2026 World Cup kickoff lineup. Let's start Korea 24 right now. South Korean Defense Minister Ahn Kyu-baek and U.S. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth held talks at the Pentagon. The two sides said in a statement after the closed-door talks that they have agreed to work together to strengthen cooperation in areas of mutual security interest. Their discussions likely included the situation in the Strait of Hormuz. Our KBS World Radio news reporter Bae Joon joins us now in the studio to give us the latest on this story and other headlines of the day. Hello, Joon.
Hello, Alana.
So attention has been drawn to this meeting as it comes in the wake of an attack on a South Korean cargo ship in the critical waterway last week. What do we know?
The meeting took place as the U.S. is urging South Korea to take an active role in ensuring freedom of navigation in the Strait of Hormuz following the attack on the South Korean ship. Let's listen to what the two defense chiefs had to say.
President Trump's historic authorization of Operation Epic Fury clearly demonstrates this administration's unwavering commitment to confronting threats and defending those interests with unwavering commitment. In this current global threat environment, the strength of our alliance is critical, and we look to our partners to stand shoulder to shoulder with us.
한미동맹은 어려운 시기에도
As a rock-U.S. alliance has get together upon a bedrock of unwavering trust even through hard times, we remain committed to close cooperation in the future in one voice.
I hope today's meeting brings about a mutually fruitful result between the ROC and the U.S.
Without a clear reference to the situation in the Middle East, the two defense chiefs agreed to continue cooperation in areas of mutual security interest, according to their media statement.
Okay, let's talk OPCON. Did the meeting touch on the planned transfer of wartime operational control from the U.S. to South Korea?
Yes, Alana, it did. The defense chiefs agreed to strengthen cooperation on key alliance issues, including the OPCON transfer. Take note that the Trump administration is pushing for increased burden sharing for its allies, urging Seoul to take the lead role in deterring North Korea with its own conventional weapons capabilities, alongside Washington's critical but more limited support. The initiative aligns with President Lee Jae-myung's campaign pledge to complete the command transition by 2028 and secure greater autonomy and a self-reliant defense within his term in office. Washington appears to prefer a slower transfer, with the U.S. Forces Korea commander recently suggesting a target deadline in the first quarter of 2029 based on South Korea's capabilities.
Let's now get the latest on the war in Iran. U.S. President Donald Trump has ramped up pressure on Tehran to accept the terms of a U.S. proposal to end the war, saying the month-long ceasefire is on massive life support. Joon, what's this about?
Speaking to reporters at the Oval Office on Monday, Trump referred to Iran's counterproposal as a piece of garbage. Let's listen to what he had to say.
For the time being, the ceasefire remains in place.
It's unbelievably weak, I would say. I would call it the weakest right now after reading the piece of garbage they sent us. I didn't even finish reading it. I said, I'm not going to waste my time reading it. I would say it's one of the weakest right now. It's our life support.
I understand that Trump is considering renewing the Project Freedom mission to help stranded vessels escape the Strait of Hormuz after it was halted amid progress in the peace talks.
Yes, he said he's mulling such matter when he spoke with Fox News earlier on Monday. U.S. media outlets reported earlier that Washington had asked Tehran to accept a 20-year moratorium on uranium enrichment and to guarantee safe passage for vessels in the maritime choke point. Iran's semi-official Tasnim news agency reported that Tehran had asked Washington to suspend acts of war on all fronts, lift sanctions against the country, and end its ongoing maritime blockade of Iranian ports.
Well, in related news, South Korea's Foreign Minister Cho Hyun says the remnants of the two objects that hit a South Korean civilian ship in the Strait of Hormuz last week will arrive here soon. Ji-yeon, what else do we know on that front?
Speaking to reporters Tuesday, Cho said an expert research institute will take the lead in looking at the debris to determine what hit the HMM Namu. The foreign ministry said it is looking into how and when it can bring in the debris. A ministry official denied media reports saying it has been confirmed to be the wreckage of a drone engine. This official said the ministry is not ruling out the possibility that the debris could have come from anti-ship missiles or other projectiles.
Shifting gears now to Tuesday's cabinet meeting, President Lee Jae-myung says now is the time to spend, stressing that increasing fiscal spending is critical for the economy as the war in the Middle East enters its 11th week.
Yes, presiding over the cabinet meeting, the president said now is the time to invest and grow the economy's potential. He asked government ministers to write next year's budget with this mindset. He then cited a government-sponsored report this week that said every 1 million won that his administration doled out to the public in spending coupons last year caused people to spend an additional 430,000 won. The president said this objectively proves that increased government spending is beneficial to the economy, adding that the real government debt remains below 10% of gross domestic product.
And he also hit back at critics who accused his administration of overspending, right?
Yes. In an apparent reference to his political adversaries, President Yi said there are voices calling out for lower fiscal spending, pointing to the public debt. But he said the country must not fall into the populist trap of supporting austerity during times of low consumption. The president's remarks come after the main conservative party has repeatedly described his administration's policy of ramping up fiscal spending as populist. President Yi said the government must play its role by cushioning the economy as inflationary pressures intensify due to the Iran war.
Moving on, in just a month, the 2026 FIFA World Cup will kick off and Team Korea has set a goal of reaching the quarterfinal stage. Ji-yeon, tell us more about the upcoming matches set for South Korea's national football team.
Led by head coach Hong Myung-bo, the national team will compete in the 39-day tournament featuring 48 teams and 104 matches across 16 cities in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. The World Cup will open with Mexico versus South Africa in Mexico City on June 11th or June 12th Korea Standard Time. South Korea's first match will be against Czechia or Czech Republic in Guadalajara, Mexico on June 12th. The national team will then face co-host Mexico on June 19th with their third matchup against South Africa in the Mexican city of Monterrey on June 25th. South Korea currently stands at number 25 in the FIFA rankings.
And remind us how the national team has fared in previous World Cups.
It made it to the semifinals at the 2022 Korea-Japan World Cup, has twice reached the round of 16 at previous FIFA World Cups on foreign turf. While South Korea reached the semifinals in 2002 as co-host of the Korea-Japan World Cup, an away quarterfinal victory has remained elusive.
For our final story today, the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped for the first time in six sessions on Tuesday. Ji-yeon, give us the details.
The KOSPI fell 179.09 points or 2.29% from the previous session to close at 7,643.15, ending a five-day winning streak. The index opened up 131.17 points or 1.68% from the previous session at 7,953.41, breaching the 7,900 mark for the first time. The gauge then soared to as high as 7,999.67 during intraday trading, but fell to as low as 7,421.71 before recovering some lost ground later in the day. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also tumbled 28.05 points or 2.32% to 1,179.29.
And that's how we'll wrap up today's news briefing. Thanks so much, Ji-yeon, for bringing us all the headlines.
Thanks, Alana.
Hey! Hi, I'm Claudia Cardenas, Taekwondo World Medalist from Ecuador and founder of Himchari Dojang. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio. After a full year of standing pat, the Bank of Korea may be preparing to shift gears. It's a striking reversal. Just last year, the central bank was deep in a loosening cycle, delivering 25 basis point cuts each in February and May to shore up the economy. But the narrative has changed. Last week, the central bank signaled that the era of easy money might be over. On today's weekly economy review, we'll look at what is driving that shift, the KOSPI's extraordinary rally, and the growing contention over bonuses at Samsung Electronics. To help us unpack all of this, we're joined today on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk of the Catholic University of Korea. Professor Yang, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
Let's start with the Bank of Korea, because the messaging has shifted noticeably from supporting growth to trying to contain inflation. The hints have been clear. Bank of Korea Senior Deputy Governor Yoo Sung-dae said last week that it may be time to consider shifting from a rate cut cycle to rate hikes, becoming the first BOK board member in recent months to publicly mention the possibility of a rate increase. BOK Policy Board Member Shin Sung-hwan made similar remarks in his retirement interview on Monday, saying that between inflation and growth, the BOK's priority is to deal with inflation. Professor, why the change in tune after the BOK has spent most of last year kind of worried about sluggish growth?
Okay, well, the first quarter growth that we saw, 1.7%, I think that made a lot of difference. But to go back a little bit, I think there was a case to be made for raising the interest rate even back in February. Now, you could argue that there was too much liquidity in the economy that was seen by very high household debt, growth in household debt, and rapid rise in the KOSPI stock index. It rose by 80% in 2025. And about 40% in the first quarter of this year. That is certainly not usual. That is certainly not normal. And while part of the rise in the stock market is due to the semiconductor industry exports doing so well, increase by this amount, it may signal that it's not just the performance of the companies which are driving the stock market, but also too much liquidity in the system, in which case you would want to reduce the money supply by raising the interest rate. But also, the first quarter growth rate made a lot of difference, I think. The first quarter growth rate was 1.7%. Originally, we had thought that the growth rate for this year would be 1.8%. That bumped up to about 2.1%. Then after the Iran war, it fell back anywhere between 1.0% to 1.9%. But we had 1.7% just in the first quarter. So now all the research institutes, all the investment banks are reconfiguring their estimates for growth this year. And now it's ranging between 2.1 to 2.7%. And given that the Korea's potential growth rate is about 1.8%, if the actual growth turns out to be at the upper range of this current estimate, so say above 2.5, I would say that the economy may actually be overheated rather than sluggish. And inflation obviously is going up because of the Iran war. We've seen the inflation hit because of the rise in gasoline prices, but we will have further inflation through the spreading effect of the Iran war through things like plastics and imported food and so on. Previously, we were worried about sluggish growth, and that was why The Bank of Korea was hesitant to raise rates, but a lot of that question about sluggish growth has disappeared with the first quarter growth rate. Now, that doesn't mean that every sector of the economy is healthy. We still have a lot of sectors where the growth is sluggish, but Bank of Korea, their tool is interest rates and money supply, and you can't really fit that into different sectors.
Mm-hmm.
The monetary policy is a blunt tool. You have to apply it to everybody or not at all. So in this case, the case of rising inflation seems to be outweighing the possibility that some of the sectors, some of the industries are feeling sluggish. And that's because overall the growth rate will be, at least from the first quarter figures, much better than what we had expected.
And Professor, when do you actually think we can expect a rate hike?
Okay, I would say sometime in the late third quarter or early fourth quarter. That would be my guess. But the Bank of Korea Monetary Policy Committee has one more meeting in May, and then they don't have a policy meeting on June. I think there's an outside small chance that they may raise the rate in May, but that would depend on how the inflation proceeds in the next week or two, and also perhaps how the stock market does in the next week or two. If the stock market growth accelerates, then the Monetary Policy Committee may deem that there's just too much liquidity in the system and we cannot wait until July.
Mm-hmm.
So they may make an early decision, but I think they will be very reluctant to do that because, well, partially we have an election coming up in June and Bank of Korea doesn't really want to deal with changes in interest rate before an election.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Korean won has been under immense pressure, hitting levels we haven't seen in years against the dollar. It's been a topic we've discussed at length on our show. Do you think the concerns about the won are part of the BOK's calculation?
I think it is a part of the calculation, but it's not as important as it used to be maybe a month or two ago. And that's because the Korean won seems to have stabilized somewhere between 1450 and 1480. Now, if we see the exchange rate rise again, if the won weakens again and approaches or exceeds 1500, then I'm sure that that would lead to a faster rise in interest rates. But right now, since it is stabilized somewhat, I don't think it's as big a factor as it was in the previous months.
Well, now let's move from monetary policy to the markets, where investors have been anything but cautious, and the KOSPI has been on quite the remarkable run. After closing above 7,000 for the first time last Wednesday, the index is approaching the 8,000 mark now. Professor, what's your outlook for the stock market going forward, both in the short term and the long term?
Okay, well, there's a lot of different opinions right now, and I think I'm in the minority here. But I'm becoming more convinced that the rise in stock market is at least partially a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that KOSPI in the last 12 months have risen by 200%. And just this year, it's risen by 82%, though it may have changed a little bit today, since I have calculated this yesterday. Now, compare this with, say, S&P in the United States. In the last 12 months, they only rose 27%, though they've been hitting historic highs. And Nikkei, over the last 12 months, went up by 66%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng by 12%. Taiwan's TWSE, 98%. So Korea has been outstripping all these other global markets, including Taiwan. And Taiwan is thought of as one of the biggest beneficiaries of the current AI rally. So you don't see numbers like this. You don't see the stock market rising by 200%. It's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason for this rapid rise is because the semiconductor firms are doing extraordinarily well. So there is some fundamental reason behind it. Also, if you compare it with the AI companies in the United States, you can argue that Korean semiconductor companies are undervalued. But still, the numbers like 200% makes you worried whether these changes are due to fundamentals or whether it's because just people over-expecting the stock price increases in the near future. And that's why I'm more and more concerned whether at least part of this is a bubble. The KOSPI has been, with the hiccup that's due to the Iran war, if we just exclude that a little bit, it's been going up by nearly 1,000 points every month. And if you look at KOSPI, they have been stuck between, say, 2,000 to 2,500 for about 10 years between 2010 and 2020. And then they've been stuck between, say, about 2,500 and 3,000 for about 2 years, 2022 to 2025. And then it just started skyrocketing in the latter half of 2025. And frankly, this is not normal.
Does the KOSPI reflect the broader economy as a whole, or is there, you know, a disconnect between the stock market and the real economy? Does a rising stock market mean the broader economy is also doing well?
Well, we used to think that. If we look back in 1950s, 1980s, we believed that the rising stock market does tend to foresee a rise in the real economy in the near future. And conversely, if the stock market goes down, slow down, or even a recession in the near future. But I think that equation, that relationship broke down since the early 2000s. And since then, we sort of gotten used to the idea that bad news is good news. What I mean by that is, whenever you had bad news about the real economy, the employment is down, the growth rate is down, stock market actually went up because people expected the central bank to lower interest rates, and that would lead to rise in stock market. It's almost like an automatic reaction, Pavlov's dogs. So there has been more and more disconnect, I think, between the real market, real economy, and the stock market. And I think that partially is what's happening here. What we see in the KOSPI market is that the semiconductor companies are doing extraordinarily well, and there are selected firms in some other industries which are doing very well as well. Hyundai Motors, some companies in the defense industries, some shipbuilding companies. But overall, we see almost as many losers in the KOSPI index as well as winners in terms of firms. So this rise in that sense is not a wide rise. And if anything, it does signal that Korean economy perhaps is still sluggish, but semiconductor industry is just outweighing everything else.
Well, speaking of winners, we have to, of course, talk about Samsung Electronics, where their strong performance has also raised some quite difficult questions over how gains should be shared with employees. Samsung's management and union sat down for last-minute negotiations on Monday and Tuesday ahead of the union's plans to launch a general strike from May 21st to June 7th, an 18-day strike. Performance bonuses are at the core of this dispute, with the union demanding 15% of the annual operating profit. In Silicon Valley, employees are often paid in stock, while it's largely cash-based here in South Korea. Professor, could longer-term stock vesting help align the interests of workers and management?
Theoretically, but I don't think the labor would want it. They already have the option of either personally or through the unions buying stocks, but they haven't taken it. Let's go back to the textbook economics a little bit. One of the differences between labor and capital is that labor does not take any risks. So they're guaranteed wages whether companies do well or they make a loss. So it's the capitalists who take all the risk. They get what we call residual of the company. If the company makes a profit, then they get the profit. if the company makes losses, then they get stuck with the losses. So in some sense, labor is exchanging stability and safety for extra profit. But sometimes you do want to have some bonuses, some extra incentive so that they would work harder. So there is some limited room here for things like bonuses and so on. But the problem seems to be that right now with the way that the union is negotiating, they want the gains when there's gains, mm-hmm. but they do not want the losses when there's losses. Mm. And what this does is, I think it creates a sort of a moral hazard because the losses are the management's losses, but gains are our gains. And what they can do is it not only encourages perhaps labor to become less responsible, but it also discourages, I think, entrepreneurship. And we see this in the younger generation. They would much rather work for a larger company where you have not only stability, but you also have higher pays in case of the company making a profit. They also have strong union protection and so on. And that means that no one wants to create a company because they're stuck with all the risk but very little benefit. And that in the long run is, I think, one of the reasons why Korea is not having a large growth in jobs, mm-hmm. That we are having job shortages for younger generations and not much job creation. So this, I think, has a long-term consequence as well. Mm-hmm. And another problem is that if the Samsung does end up giving, say, 15% of their operating profits to the labor union, that's not just 15% of profits now, but it means extra labor costs in the future because there's a very good possibility that this bonus will be counted as what the Korean courts call ordinary pay. And ordinary pay is used as a basis for calculating pensions, benefits, and so on. So let's say that the Samsung doesn't make much profit next year. And if you look at the semiconductor division, then there's a large variability in how much profits they make year after year. And it may mean that even if they take a loss, say, in a couple of years from now, they will have higher labor costs because the bonuses that they figure in from this year will be counted as a ordinary pay, which is the basis for calculating pensions and so on. So they will be stuck with higher labor costs even if they no longer make these extraordinary profits. So I think we'll see this standoff continue, and there's no reason for either side to make compromise early. In fact, in these type of negotiations where both sides are very much strongly in opposite positions, it's really unusual to see negotiations finish early. Mm-hmm. So it'll take at least until the last minute, and probably it'll pass the deadline before they finally come to a decision. In some ways, it's a contest of who can take the most pain.
Mm-hmm. Now, Professor, you just briefly touched on the job market and job competition. Samsung, of course, is competing with global tech firms for the best engineers. Does South Korea risk a brain drain if it doesn't offer more lucrative compensation packages?
Well, it's theoretically possible, and I think it has occurred for some star employees. But those employees are usually in the research division rather than normal operations. So we have seen cases where a lot of these researchers have been lured away by foreign competitors and taking some technology with them as well, either legally or illegally. Mm-hmm. So it's always a possibility, but this current strike, I don't think applies in that case because we're not talking necessarily about people who hold secrets or proprietary technology, but just people who are working in the factories for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where we'll wrap up today's discussion. Economics Professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea, thank you as always for joining us today.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped 179.09 points, or 2.29% on Tuesday, to close at 7,643.15. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ slid 28.05 points, or 2.32%, to close at 1,179.29. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Alana.
Daniel, what's our starting point today?
In South Korea, all able-bodied men past the age of 18 are required to enlist and serve in the nation's military for between 18 and 21 months, depending on the branch one is serving. As such, we hear a great variety of news about their life in the military. However, today we dive into a newly rising phenomenon in the barracks, cosmetic surgery.
Okay, so it goes without saying that military life can be very physically demanding, from training exercises to daily duties. How can a soldier getting plastic surgery maybe impact the rest of their unit?
So when a soldier undergoes cosmetic surgery during leave, which usually lasts from a few days to at most less than a week, and returns to the military unit, in many instances, be it double eyelid surgery or rhinoplasty, they will still need time to rest to fully recover. Recovery here mostly applies to getting the swelling to go down. In most cases, the commanding officer would not want to risk deploying that soldier to duty, be it training, physically demanding maintenance tasks, or guard duty. So adjustments are made, mainly involving duty shifts with other soldiers required to fill the gap or take on longer duties. Such changes can adversely impact troop morale, as it can trigger resentment among peers who must cover the workload while recovering soldiers receive, some would say, special accommodations.
Right. And have we seen a notable rise in the number of conscript soldiers that are getting these plastic surgeries?
So there are no official military statistics to clearly identify whether there has been spikes in soldiers undergoing such procedures in recent years, but there have been notable spikes in questions and reviews written on online message boards of various clinics by soldiers. One consultation manager of a cosmetic surgery clinic in the affluent Gangnam area said, on average, 2 to 3 active duty soldiers visit every week for consultations or surgery.
Wow. Do we know what's driving this trend? Why are more soldiers choosing to get these procedures done during their service?
Well, there's been a shift in the formerly rigid military culture, with more leeway given compared to past in terms of soldiers opting to undergo such procedures. There's also been a significant rise in conscript soldiers' salary, which is around 1.2 million won, or over $800 US, for a corporal who would be slightly past the midpoint of his service period. Clinics also aggressively target these soldiers using various targeted campaigns, including ads on social media, offering military discounts, and also advice on using private health insurance. The military has a tough balancing act to tackle between the need for systemic management measures to protect combat readiness, while also considering the values of a changing generation of soldiers.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
The South Korean government plans to tighten regulations related to decaffeinated coffee product labeling.
Okay, what are some of the changes to come that our coffee aficionados should be expecting?
The Ministry of Food and Drug Safety announced Tuesday that stricter new labeling standards will take effect from January 1st, 2028. Under the new standards, coffee products can only be labeled as decaffeinated if they're made from beans containing no more than 0.1% residual caffeine.
Okay, well, naturally that raises the question, what exactly counts as decaf under the current standard?
Currently, decaf coffee must have at least 90% of its caffeine removed, but the government does not regulate the final amount of residual caffeine. What many people assume wrong is that decaffeinated product does not mean 100% caffeine-free. The ministry explained that even decaffeinated coffee can have high residual caffeine levels if the original beans were high in caffeine, running counter to consumers' expectations that the product should contain almost no caffeine.
And Daniel, what's the goal here? What is the biggest benefit these changes are aiming to bring to consumers?
As part of such government efforts, consumers can expect improvement in terms of reliability of labeling and avoid mistaking what the product contains and offers. The ministry vowed to continue making changes to ensure what consumers see on the shelf is exactly what they get in terms of the contents. The ministry has also strengthened labeling requirements for alcoholic beverages, as there's been growing collaboration between alcoholic products and various brands, namely those involving characters or IPs that might be popular with children, which can lead to greater consumer confusion.
So ultimately, when it comes to coffee, the new rule should make decaf labeling clearer, not 100% caffeine-free, but probably closer to what consumers expect. Let's turn the spotlight now to our final story for today.
Hope, director Nang Jin's latest sci-fi thriller, is set for its global premiere at the Cannes Film Festival in France beginning this week.
Okay, no spoilers, but fill us in on what the movie Hope is about.
Like many of his other films, Hope has elements of horror, mystery, and thriller. It's about how a small town near the demilitarized zone reacts to mysterious events occurring in the area. The cast includes Hwang Jung-min and Cho In-sung as key characters in the town, with Chung Ho-yeon of Squid Game joining them. Also, this is a collab. This also features Hollywood superstars, including Michael Fassbender, Alicia Vikander, and Taylor Russell, completing this very impressive cast.
And is Na's latest work eyeing any specific prizes at this very, very, very prestigious film fest?
Well, Na's movie is the first to compete for the top prize, the Palme d'Or, since Park Chan-wook's decision to leave and Hirokazu Koreeda's Korean-produced Broker 4 years ago. This is not Na's first time at Cannes, having been invited to the prestigious festival 3 times previously. His Cannes debut was in 2008 with The Chaser, his debut feature film. 3 years later, in 2011, he screened The Yellow Sea, and in 2016, The Wailing for Non-Competition.
And Daniel, aside from Na's Hope, remind us what other Korean works we can expect to see in France this month.
There are several other Korean films to screen at the festival. Yeon Sang-ho's Colony, a zombie movie starring Chun Ji-hyun and Koo Kyo-hwan, will also play at Cannes in the non-competitive midnight screenings. Dora, July Jung's coming-of-age feature with Kim Do-yeon and Sakura Ando will screen at the Cannes Director's Fortnight, a concurrent film festival. And Park Chan-wook will actually be joining the main festival as a jury president, making history as the first Korean to take on that role.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thanks so much, Daniel, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's that time again, Hallyu Highlights, your weekly scoop on everything hot in Korean entertainment, from the latest K-pop hit to the K-dramas everyone's binging. And as usual, we're joined today on the line by our resident K-culture expert, Bernie Cho. Hey, Bernie, great to have you with us.
Always good to be back.
Well, after months of anticipation, BTS's Arirang World Tour is now well underway, with hype and hysteria following the 7 members of the K-pop supergroup at every stop. Among the loudest and proudest BTS fans in the world are those in Mexico, with 3 sold-out stadium shows in Mexico City on May 7th, 9th and 10th. BTS's visit was more than just another tour stop. It was a major cultural moment for fans and definitely a milestone event for K-pop in Latin America. So Bernie, we previously talked about the president of Mexico personally welcoming the members to her country on our Korea segment. But tell us, what were some other highlights of these Mexico concerts?
So we can't start the story without giving a little bit more shine and a little bit more spotlight to Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum. Not only was she the head of state, she probably self-appointed herself to be the head of all BTS fans who were just utterly, absolutely clamoring to get tickets for this particular show. Apparently, as soon as the tickets went on sale, they sold 136,000 tickets in under an hour.
Wow.
And apparently, over 2.1 billion fans tried to get tickets. And as a result of this skyrocketing demand for BTS tickets, the president herself made a personal plea to the president of South Korea, Lee Jae-myung, to see if possibly maybe BTS could maybe squeeze an extra date. Now, the world tour was already solidly booked, sold out around the world. So that was not to be. But oh my goodness, what Mexico did to show the love was utterly, absolutely astounding. For one, the president invited the band to come over to the palace, you know, just kind of say hi. But oh my goodness, she wasn't the only one there to say hi. 50,000 fans rolled up in 5 hours to personally say hi. And on top of that, each of the three shows, roughly about 50,000 capacity, had outside 40,000 fans screaming, chanting, singing outside as if this was a massive World Cup football soccer game. We're going to get to that in a bit. But, I mean, it was utterly, absolutely astounding. And again, some of the statistics that were coming out of Mexico and Mexico City, it turns out right now, the number one city, the number one country, the number one market for BTS for streaming worldwide is, drumroll please, Mexico.
Wow. I mean, I saw some of those videos of those fans, like you just mentioned, Bernie, not actually inside at these concerts, but outside. And you could really see their emotion and their excitement and just sense the anticipation. It was so amazing to see. Now, you just touched upon the World Cup. That is right. The 2026 FIFA World Cup. It's now just 1 month away, 1 month away, and co-hosted by Mexico, as well as the US and Canada. After BTS's Jungkook dazzled audiences at the opening ceremony of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, another K-pop superstar is stepping onto football's biggest stage. Blackpink's Lisa has been announced as one of the major music acts set to perform in Los Angeles as part of the kickoff celebrations for this year's tournament. Bernie, give us some of the specifics. Where and when will this event be held?
Oh, this news is breaking right now in real time, so a lot of details are just starting to trickle in. But what we do know so far, and these were reported by not only The Sun in the UK, but also from the venerable New York Times, Katy Perry is supposed to be one of the headliners, and apparently it will be at the Los Angeles SoFi Stadium, where the World Cup opening ceremony is to be held. Apparently, the rapper Future, LA-based DJ Sanjoy, and Paraguayan singer Marilina Bogado are also expected to perform at the opening events, the opening ceremony for the World Cup. Now, technically, the first game is actually going to be staged in Mexico City at the Estadio Azteca. However, the opening ceremony itself will be held, as I mentioned before, in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium. And to have Lisa be the K-pop representative has already caused a lot of ripples, a lot of waves, and a lot of excitement. And the timing could not be more perfect. It just seems like almost yesterday, technically, maybe just a few weeks ago, where Lisa caused a huge sensation and a huge splash with her cameo duet appearance at Coachella. So for her to come back to LA a few weeks later for even bigger stage is truly, absolutely astounding. And more importantly, just a whole lot of props and a whole lot of love for Lisa, La Lisa of Blackpink representing.
What a lineup. I mean, it's going to be an amazing opening ceremony. And as, of course, this World Cup fever builds again, you know, we're just a month away now. K-pop fans have even more to count down to. Around the start of the tournament, and again, just after the trophy is lifted, we're going to have two major comebacks. So first up is the solo debut of former ENHYPEN member Hyesung, who is preparing to release his first single under a new stage name, Evan. Bernie, what can we expect from Evan?
Well, you know, whenever the World Cup or the Olympics come around the corner, K-pop stars, be it new, be it now, be it old, they all try to steer clear from those exact weeks. However, a little bit before and a little bit after the big event, we see a lot of really impressive album launches, single releases, music video drops, and in this case, comebacks. Evan, which is a name that we all now have to get a little bit more used to, is a newcomer that's coming back out as a solo artist. And the circumstances are a bit strange in the sense that really without much explanation, he left ENHYPEN And usually when a member leaves, it's usually sort of clouded and shrouded with some sort of suspicions or worse, scandal. But in this case, HYBE and the label basically said, no, it's nothing to be worried about. We want him to basically sort of flourish as an artist, producer, and singer-songwriter. And so they have been fully supportive and actually fully behind this particular solo release and solo effort. And so although his exit seemed a little bit sudden, the fans feel a little bit more reassured that he is coming out. And more importantly, as a solo artist, he's going to be able to show off and showcase some more his songwriting, composing, and producing abilities. He's done so in the past as part of ENHYPEN. But, you know, coming out as a solo artist is something that is highly anticipated for both old fans, but more importantly, some potentially new fans as well.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to quickly ask you about, of course, that other comeback. This one was announced in a bit more of an unconventional way. Over the weekend, legendary JYP boy band 2PM celebrated their 15th anniversary with two shows at Tokyo Dome and surprised fans with a not-so-subtle concert visual teasing their first concerts in Korea in nearly 3 years. Now, we haven't seen any formal press release, but they did not stop the news from spreading fast. Within hours, the newly revealed dates had become a major talking point among fans online. Of course, not just in Korea and Japan, but around the world. So, Bernie, tell us, what are these dates?
Yeah, for a band as big as 2PM, you know, a press release at the very least, a press conference is kind of normal. But for them to slip it in on the flat screen, the big screen, the LCD screens, right in the middle of their concert in Tokyo, I have to say was a bit of a stroke of genius. It was almost like the anti-press became the press. What we do know so far is it's been nearly 3 years since they last performed in Korea together. But what we know and has been confirmed is on August 8th and August 9th at the Inspire Arena in Incheon, which for those of you who want to drive, and oh, I hope you don't have to walk, it's about 30 kilometers north of Seoul. They will be in a show appropriately titled enough. It's called The Return. And it's got a lot of fans excited because the last time they did a show was in September 2023. And again, they cannot pick more perfect titles for their concerts and their shows. In 2023, it was literally figuratively, it was just called It's 2PM. Now, I think it's safe to say the concert itself will not start at 2PM, but nonetheless, tickets are going to go on sale very, very soon. And again, mark your calendar, circle those dates, put a big bullseye on August 8th, August 9th, Inspire Arena in Incheon.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Hallyu Highlights. A big thanks, as always, to Bernie Cho for guiding us through the biggest stories and buzz in Korean entertainment. Always great to have you with us, Bernie.
Always good to be here.
That's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. We've got more stories, interviews and insights you won't want to miss. I've been your host, Alana Hill. Thanks for joining me. Take care and goodbye.
What you're about to hear could save a life. These are step-by-step instructions for performing CPR, or cardiopulmonary resuscitation, a life-saving emergency procedure used when a person's heart is not functioning properly. First, if someone collapses and is unresponsive, ensure the scene is safe. Tap the patient's shoulder and shout, "Are you okay?" If the person remains unresponsive, if their breathing is abnormal, or if there are any signs of a seizure, immediately call 119 or your local emergency number or point out someone nearby to make the call. The faster you call, the better. You can also make a video call or send photos to the local emergency number. Start CPR immediately, rather than leaving the scene to find someone else for help or looking for a pulse. Place the heel of your dominant hand in the center of the person's chest. Place your other hand on top, keep your arms straight, and press hard and fast. Press hard and fast at a rate of 100 to 120 compressions per minute. That's the beat of Staying Alive playing right now. Push in at least 2 inches or 5 centimeters and allow the chest to rise fully between compressions. If you are not trained and are not confident in rescue breathing, continue hands-only CPR until emergency medical personnel arrive. Immediate CPR can help maintain blood flow to the brain and vital organs. Acting quickly may save a life. This has been a public safety message on CPR. KBS World Radio is committed to keeping our listeners informed and prepared because knowing what to do in an emergency makes all the difference. Stay safe, stay informed.